Blog Talk Radio.
Hoping Dr. Gopher, there he is. Okay, so we're on, huh?
Good now. Yep.
I thought I had my whole system set up because it was working like it wasn't working before, and when I went to talk, it wasn't coming on.
Right.
So it felt like it was working from the microphones and everything else, but it just wasn't working. But anyway.
Bummer.
So.
Well, here we are.
Anyway. So, I guess the show already started, so I want to welcome everybody to today's show. I'm your co-host, Dr. Ron Epley, and with me, as usual, is...
your other co-host, Dr. Shane Goforth. Remember, this is a call-in show, so we want to encourage everybody to give us a call. And that number is 347-989-8722. So, give us a call, and we'll get you on.
You know, what's funny is we had old technology 12 years ago that wasn't supposed to work, that everybody I talked to said it was not supposed to work. And yet it worked
right.
Better than anything we had. Once we get to Windows 10 and newer systems, nothing will work right.
Right? Isn't that just wonderful?
I know. That's the modern world. Things don't work the way they're supposed to.
Yep. I know. I find it funny.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's crazy. I know. I know. So here we go.
Here
vitamin D deficiency.
I was excited to talk to you about our weekend. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, no, our weekend. Anyway, vitamin D deficiency is linked to an increased risk of anemia.
Okay, well, that's interesting enough. I didn't expect that.
Yeah, I know. It says a study of 937 children whose ages range from 9 to 12 pointed to low vitamin D supply as one of the reasons why school children in Iran were three times as likely to suffer from anemia compared to their healthier counterparts.
Wow.
It says the study found that low vitamin D levels were seen in 96.8% of the children compared to 91.5% of the non-anemic group. But look how much deficiency there was in Iran.
Right. Yeah, they get sun there all the time, don't they?
Yeah.
I mean, to be vitamin D deficient in a place like that, that's doing something there.
Yeah, what's up with that? Over 90 to 96% of school kids were deficient in vitamin D.
Well, I guess it's because we live indoors all the time now, huh?
I guess so.
We don't go outside as much, even in Iran.
I know. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, no kidding.
So listen to this. Babies that were fed soy-based formula have changes in reproductive system tissue.
That's not surprising at all. All that estrogen in there.
Yep, that's what they said. Subtle estrogen-like responses in infants. And they said this warrants further investigation is what they're talking about.
Yeah, it does. And maybe the disuse of soy products for infants.
Yep. I know. So look at that. What are kids to do these days?
I know, right?
I mean, right off the bat, they're being fed soy-based crap, which screws their endocrine system up. And then they're not getting enough vitamin D, which could lead to anemia, as well as many other things. It's like, oh, my God,
right.
What world do we live in now where we're totally deficient in everything now?
I know. It's interesting.
And that doesn't even count how toxic the world is, right?
Right.
Oh, man, what chance does anybody have?
Yeah, it makes you wonder, doesn't it? What are we going to do when this happens or that happens?
Yeah, I know. Okay, so I've been having a lot more patients coming in sick again or calling in sick in the last couple of weeks. So I went to Dr. Mercola's website and I pulled up the thing that says the big bad flu data, what you need to know about vaccines effectiveness and alternatives. So here we go. It says interim estimates from the CDC suggest the overall adjusted vaccine effectiveness against the influenza for 2017-2018 is about 36%.
So it's
pretty poor.
Yep.
No. While health officials claim flu vaccination will lessen your symptoms should you contact either type A or type B, French researchers show vaccination resulted in insignificant lessening of symptoms, limited to a reduction in initial headache complaints among those who had been vaccinated.
Yeah, I totally wanted to call BS on that.
So you get a vaccine, even if it doesn't prevent it, you're going to have less symptoms. BS. No way.
Right.
A 2014 meta-analysis concluded that the number needed to treat for influenza vaccine is 71. That means 71 people have to be vaccinated in order for a single case of influenza to be avoided.
Huh.
I know. A 2017 meta-review found that the number needed treated for vitamin D was 33, meaning one person is spared from acute respiratory infection for every 33 people taking a vitamin D supplement. For people with severe vitamin D deficiency, the number needed to treat was 4.
Huh. Well, cool.
Yeah, I know, right?
We're so darn effective.
And here's the last thing he wrote there on his little bullet things at a glance. The flu shot may actually make you more susceptible to the influenza and other infections, a result linked to heterogeneous immunity, which, while lowering your risk for infection from the vaccine-induced virus, also raises your risk of infection from other viral subtypes. You know what? It's okay, Dr. Goforth. We'll just vaccinate you against everything.
Right. And so what it'll do is it won't prevent anything. It'll just make everything worse.
Yeah.
It'll make me more susceptible
to
other things.
Yeah. And then you'll just go get vaccines for those things next because you're going to be more susceptible to them.
Well, yeah, because it works, right? Oy.
I know.
You know, we talk about it a number of times. It wouldn't be so bad if this was something they were vaccinating us against that was life-threatening, saying, okay, well, you know, it probably work. And, you know, if I had a 30% better chance of avoiding something by taking a vaccine that was life-threatening, I would take it. However, by taking this flu vaccine and getting it, you know, and it's only 30% effective against the flu, really not that big a deal, but you're more susceptible to other things like life-threatening illnesses. Why do I want to do that? I mean, flu sucks.
I know.
It sucks to get the flu. It feels terrible. But it's not life-threatening.
No.
And so doesn't that make it even worse?
People.
Does it even make it worse for the very old and the very young to get a flu vaccine?
You know, that
I'm
not 100% sure. Yeah, that I'm not 100% sure because theoretically, those are the ones more susceptible to it, to the flu. And I've always defaulted, like when my father-in-law was alive, because he was an old guy and had heart disease, I was against the vaccines, but I always let him get pneumonia, but didn't want him to get the flu shot.
Right, right.
And, of course, he never really got the flu. Because he never got vaccinated.
Well, there you go.
But he sure got sick whenever the doctors made him run some of the tests they wanted to do. Like, oh, listen, you're getting old enough. We need to do a colonoscopy. And they gave him that fleet stuff and made him sicker than a dog for days. And it's like, okay.
Yeah, right.
So anyway, here's another one from Dr. Mercola. Since I was looking up the vitamin D, I looked up this one. It says, without magnesium, vitamin D supplementation may backfire. So here's the five bullet highlights. When taking high-dose vitamin D3, it's important to take extra vitamin K2 and magnesium to avoid complications associated with excessive calcification.
Huh.
Now, that didn't say how high dose. I don't see what he said what a high dose was.
Yeah, that would have been my next question.
I'm assuming the high dose is those that go to the medical doctor and are taking 50,000 units a week at one
right.
time.
That
says magnesium. Go ahead.
No, that would just seem plausible. I mean, if you're taking that high dose, like to like give you those injections, then I would see that. But
yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So magnesium, the fourth most abundant material in your body, is a component necessary for the activation of vitamin D. And without sufficient amounts of it, your body cannot properly utilize the vitamin D you're taking. Well, we've talked about that before.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to supplement my diet with magnesium. So, and I'm recommending it on ever-increasing doses. I just started testing people, and we'll see. Says as many as 50% of Americans taking vitamin D supplements may not get sufficient benefit, as the vitamin D simply gets stored in its inactive form due to magnesium deficiency. The only way to determine how much sun exposure is enough and or how much vitamin D you need to take is to measure your vitamin D level, ideally twice a year. Says to assess your magnesium level, check your red blood cell magnesium level and track signs and symptoms of magnesium insufficiency. Determine how much magnesium you need. Low potassium and calcium are also common laboratory signs indicating magnesium deficiency.
Interesting.
Yep, it is, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Huh.
So probably by default, we probably should be recommending a little bit more magnesium.
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay, so here's an article. It says Big Mac and lies. It says McDonald's food has more calories, sugar, and salt than it did 30 years ago, despite the chain's pledges to be healthier.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah, isn't that? Yeah. That's amazing, right? You think they're getting healthier because they tell you they're getting healthier. We have more awareness of how unhealthy they are. And what do? They get more unhealthy.
Right. Huh.
Okay, so are your computer screens causing dry eye problems? Eat more good fats to repair the lipid layer in your eyes. It's another reason to take the fish oil, right?
Right.
I'm looking at it here to see if it says which fats they're talking about. They're basically just talking about essential fatty acids. Nothing specific. Okay, listen to this. This is amazing. It says physical activity may be more important than diet for preventing type 2 diabetes, according to new research.
Really? Well, that's good.
Yeah, I'm not kidding, right?
Yeah.
Yep, I know. Oops, I got a copy of that study, another one. I don't need that one. Oh, listen to what people are doing. It says, this is crazy, Dr. Goforth. Probably they listen to our radio show and are going nuts. It says, people desperate for relief from autoimmune and bowel diseases are trying do-it-yourself fecal transplants with disastrous results.
I bet so. I was wondering when that was going to happen. I really was. I've often thought about people doing that. I don't even want to figure out how they're trying to do that, but whatever. That's something else right there. Too funny.
I know. They're like, I'm going to save some money, dude, here. Can you just poop right here so I can use it?
I know, right? That's the, I know. Oh, yuck. Too funny. That's one of the craziest.
Says the dangerous trend can increase an individual's risk of hepatitis and HIV, along with various conditions like MS, obesity, Parkinson's, and even sleep disorders. So did you hear that? That's crazy. Fecal transplants can lead to MS and Parkinson's.
Yeah. That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty impressive, actually. That'll lead to that bad of stuff.
Yeah, I know. But God,
so there's
got to
be more
people
to... There's got to be more to that.
Can you imagine... Hey, Dr. G, can you imagine being the person goes, you know, listen, I can't afford to go to the doctor. I want to do a fecal transplant. Going up and asking someone if they could borrow their feces or something.
I know, right?
I can't imagine. Hey, dude, I don't know how to say this. But do you have any spare fecal material that I could use?
You look healthy.
God.
But, you know, actually what I was thinking about, though, what I was trying to say earlier is that the interesting thing about that is that people are doing the, you know, at-home fecal transplants. And if they're, you know, coming up with MS and what did you say, rheumatoid arthritis or something, whatever it was.
Parkinson's, yeah.
Parkinson's, okay. Then the interesting thing about that to me is then, well, if they're now coming up with this stuff, then doesn't that lead to a really good research project? Because if people are having these problems, then isn't there something more about the bacteria in a person's gut that leads them to have MS and Parkinson's and other autoimmune disorders?
Yeah, it also leads you to wonder how many of these things might be transmitted,
right,
by people not washing their hands or being clean, right?
Right.
How much does that might contribute to it?
Exactly. That's a really good question, too.
Yeah, it might be just one factor in a growing list of things that contribute to it, right? It's just the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak.
No kidding. Interesting.
Okay, so here we go. Some probiotics can improve muscle health and protein absorption, according to a new scientific review.
Nice.
So in other words, people get injured muscles, like a strain, they may need to take probiotics as well as protein and stuff, right, to help heal and repair them. I find it interesting.
I do too. That's really interesting.
Yeah, you know, it gets complicated, doesn't it, Dr. G? It's like people come to us with back pain all the time, neck pain, injuries, and so they have a strain, right? Or strain / sprain. And if we're trying to do the best possible for them, how much are we missing the boat if we're not recommending things like, well, we need probiotics and you need some extra protein, you need some fish oil for the inflammation, you need this, that, and the other thing. And this is what you need to get a fully good heal and repair versus here, lay down, let me just crack your neck.
Right, right.
You know,
that's exactly right, too.
How much more should we be offering these people instead of just the typical stuff we do? You know, you go to the doctor, they're just going to give you a pain pill. If you go to the chiropractor, you know what? Maybe all we're going to do is crack your back. Who are they going to go to get good care if we don't step up and do it ourselves?
Yeah, it's a good question.
And then what is really good care now, right?
Right.
So you and I, we've come, Yeah, you and I, we've come to believe over the years that just eating well, moving well, thinking well makes a big deal. So it doesn't matter what's wrong with them. You still need to eat a paleo / Mediterranean diet. It doesn't matter what's wrong with you. You still need to get your fish oil, take fish oil supplementations and probably vitamin D, depending on what the lab tests say, and probiotics and maybe a multiple vitamin. And it looks like maybe some magnesium too, right?
Right.
So it doesn't matter what's wrong with you. You need this. But
exactly right.
But the general public, they're funny. You can't. It's hard to tell them that this is what you need. You're deficient, without them, thinking, well, I don't feel that working on my body, so I'm not going to do it.
Right.
I suppose if you put a whole concoction of all that mixed together, in with a little bit of an opioid, so they get a little bit high off of it, then they go, oh, okay, I feel that working. I better take that every day. Yeah. I mean, it seems like that sometimes, but that's what the public really wants.
Right.
Okay, now listen to this one. More on muscle repair from the injury. It says vitamin D may accelerate muscle repair when combined with olive oil.
Oh, that's interesting.
It says researchers in Italy fed some rats a regular diet while others were given a diet based on high-fat, extra virgin olive oil, or high-fat butter. Some were also given 4,000 units of vitamin D supplements. A total of 28 rats were studied over the course of 10 weeks. After the trial period ended, the researchers examined the skeletal muscle fiber thickness along with biomarkers of muscle synthesis inflammation. All the rats who took vitamin D had significantly thicker muscle fiber than those who did not take the supplements. Even more surprisingly, however, was the fact that those who ate the olive oil as well noted even greater muscle fiber thickness.
Hmm. Cool.
So, very, very freaking interesting. So if we want people, so how many of our patients that come into us with problems need vitamin D and maybe vitamin D with olive oil? And maybe, you know what I mean? It's like every one of them. We're kind of negligent if we don't. And how many of these people do we kind of turn into chronic chiropractic patients because they need more than just an adjustment? The adjustment helps so they keep coming back over and over again rather than getting their body well, right?
Right. Very interesting.
I don't know, interesting question. Because, you know, you and I have talked about this before, and we see it in our clinic, right? When we get people to go for a lot more chiropractic care for a longer period of time, they seem to do real well with all kinds of stuff, right?
Right.
And but if you let them go too soon because an insurance company may only pay 8 visits, even though their symptoms seem to go away, they stop the care, it all comes back. People that are healthier, when they're real healthy and they're doing all the right things, it's like you and I, right? When you need an adjustment, what do you need? Ah, hey, Effley, I need an adjustment. Once every couple of weeks or so, you get an adjustment, and are you really hurting that bad?
Usually not that often.
No, it's just time to get an adjustment because we know it's time to get an adjustment. So our adjustments kind of hold and we stay in place because we do a lot of stuff to be healthier. Whereas our patients who don't do that, it's like, man, no wonder they got to come in 3 to 5 times a week, it seems like, for a while, because they're just not healthy enough to be able to hold their adjustments.
Right, exactly right, too.
Okay, so seniors who are socially active through volunteering or working or caring for their grandchildren are significantly healthier, according to a new study. Yeah, that makes sense. You know, I see a lot of grandparents who end up custody with their grandchildren, right?
Right.
And they seem to do pretty well. But then by default, too, the sick ones aren't capable of being active. And so I wonder what it is.
Right.
If being active allows them to be healthier, or their healthier allows them to be active. Or is it just a circular thing? They both help each other.
Yeah, I would kind of think it's more like that, right?
Yeah.
Because anytime we're down, we're not very active. You know, we don't, meaning that, you know, like if we come up, we can track some bug or whatever, you know, we're not very active. You know, not right away, not for a while, but yeah, it's interesting.
Okay, so this one's a pretty cool study here. It says, immune systems go haywire when mice are fed fast food, causing an explosion of inflammation.
Really? That's interesting, too. Makes a little bit of sense, though, right? Because most fast food is
high sugar.
Omega-6, high sugar.
High
protein, dairy.
High fat, yeah.
Low protein. A lot of times low fat. Depends on what they're doing.
Or the wrong kind of fat, right?
Or the wrong kind of fat.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah. So I'm not going to read the whole story. I read the whole article a couple of times. It was pretty pretty interesting. Just fast food, all of a sudden, boom. Massive inflammation biomarkers everywhere just from eating some fast food.
Right.
So I was having a conversation with someone the other day who they have a friend who's a medical doctor who's really into inflammation as the cause of all disease. And that person pretty much wants everybody to take anti-inflammatories every day because inflammation is causing everything.
Right.
And but what happened is like, well, whatever happened to what's causing the inflammation?
Right. That was my first thought.
Because inflammation is necessary. If we turn off inflammation, the body can't heal and repair.
Right.
So when we need it to happen, if we turn it off, we don't heal and repair properly. But we overinflame all the time, and one of the reasons is, boom, fast food diet, massive inflammation. So what are you going to do, take a ibuprofen after every meal?
Apparently, right? I don't know.
Maybe that's why you're supposed to take them with meals.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, do not take on an empty stomach. Take it with a meal, probably because the meal causes massive inflammation, and that's what you need the ibuprofen for.
Right, that's fine.
Okay, so here's another interesting article, which I like because I've seen the same thing in my life. It says, three reasons why store-bought almond milk is a bad idea.
Okay,
I remember in the days when I was really struggling with dairy and only beginning to learn how bad it really was and how many sources it was everywhere before I was able to avoid it. And there wasn't many dairy alternatives back in the day. They had like rice milk or something, right? Which is so watery, it was terrible. It's like, oh, this is terrible. Can't cook with it. You can't drink it. It's nasty. And then I bought this machine called a SoyQuick. It's basically a soy milk making machine, but I can use it for almond milk. So I'd buy raw almonds and make my own almond milk. Before that, I'd put them in a blender and blend it for half an hour practically to get all the gritty grain out of it to make an almond milk, right?
Right.
But with the SoyQuick, it was really nice. It made some nice almond milk, and it was good tasting. Wasn't nearly as sweet as the stuff you buy at the store because they had sugar to it. But and then they started coming up with all of these substitutes. And, of course, you know, I get lazy and I buy the almond milk, although I don't drink it much anymore. And now I know now I can see here why they say it's different. They said, number one, store-bought almond milk. It's kind of short on almonds. It doesn't have much almonds in it.
Right.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
It says a gallon of milk contains less than a handful of almonds.
Wow.
Yeah. It says and a European brand of almond milk called Allpro was revealed to contain less than 2% of almonds in the entire container. Okay,
well,
store-bought almond milk is not from sprouted almonds. I don't know what that is, except for digestive concerns. I use just raw almonds is what I used to use anyway. And here it says soaking almonds first helps get rid of the digestive problems associated with raw almonds. But I always soaked them anyway. That was just part of what we did. Store-bought almond milk contains unnecessary ingredients like carrageenan, locust bean gum, sunflower lecithin to thicken it up. And some other things in there that cause digestive concern. It says here, a blender and a nut milk bag is all you need, which is similar to what I had. But again, here's what happens, Dr. G, is, you know, I know better. But, you know, I get lazy like all my patients. That's why I always tell my patients, you know, juice for a source of a multiple vitamin, but then get a high-quality multiple vitamin, too, because you'll juice, because it'll feel good for a while. Then all of a sudden, things will get in the way, and you won't do it anymore, and then you need a multiple vitamin, right?
Right.
Making your own almond milk is really good and fun for a while, and then after a while, you just get lazy or you don't have time to do it, and you end up having to do something different.
Right. Yep, that makes sense.
Because unfortunately, when you make your own stuff, there's no preservatives in it, so it doesn't last as long in the refrigerator as all the other stuff seems to.
Right.
Yeah, I know. I don't do much milk substitutes anymore. In the beginning, when you're trying to get off dairy, you kind of want them, right?
Right.
And because it's really hard, because almost everything that you eat is made of grains and dairy, right? And so when you're trying to get rid of them, it's like, what in the heck am I supposed to eat? And then you go, oh, my God, look at this. They got almond milk. I'm going to try that as a substitute. I can pour that on my cereal, and it's great. So you decide you can't eat the cereal anymore because it's grains, right?
Right.
So it takes a few years.
Yep.
It takes a few years to change everything up.
That's so true. That's exactly the way it is, too. We hardly ever buy almond milk anymore.
You notice the same thing, right?
Yeah. Exactly right. Notice exactly the same thing. Just makes you kind of, you know, and when you start changing over, and it's like, okay, so why do I need to buy almond milk? I don't eat cereal. You know, you can't really cook with it all that well.
No, and you don't drink with – you don't need it for macaroni and cheese, right?
Nope, that's right. So, yeah, it's like, I'm okay. I don't need it. So.
I think I still get it. I still use it every once in a while when I'm, traveling and I want to buy a Starbucks coffee or something, and I go make it and put some almond milk in it or something like that, right?
Right.
So. The nice thing about places like Starbucks now is they've been slowly over the years changing. So I can find places with really bitter dark chocolate now.
Uh-huh.
So I can go back to have a little bit of dessert in a cup like I used to love, but it's just so awful for you, right? I can go back to that now because they have coconut milk, they have almond milk, and now they have dark chocolate. So I can have one every once in a while going, oh, this is actually pretty decent again.
Yeah. That's what you said.
But, man, it took years to get them to do that.
Yeah, you know, it takes time, and it also takes dollars, people's dollars to either, you know, stop going to that particular way and then dollars to go that other way. So, you know.
Yeah, I used to always stop. Even if I just bought a cup of coffee, I'd always ask him, do you have a milk substitute? No. Okay, we'll have dark coffee then. Do you have dark chocolate? No, we have. Okay, I'll have just regular coffee then. And so I just made it a point that every time I went to them, I'd mention it. And then eventually someone go, you know, we hear this enough, let's carry it and see what happens. And then other people would start doing it. And so, yeah, just this demand.
Yep.
Anyway, vegans may be more at risk for iodine deficiency, according to a new study.
That's not surprising at all. they'd have to eat mass amounts of seaweed.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, this is funny, Dr. Goforth. The more we're looking into this, you know, I think I remember maybe in college someone telling us, you know, our diet is just awful, we're deficient in all kinds of stuff. But you know what? We never had any good backing about it. Now we're getting more and more scientific backing about what's happening. I am beginning to really wonder, is it even possible, even eating healthy, to even come close to getting what we need anymore?
Yeah, I was wondering that too. I've been wondering that for a while myself, because that's the same question you ask. You know, I was like, well, what do you do to eat healthy? Well, you got to do these things. And then you tell people, well, you know, but if you eat, you know, vegetables and stuff like that, you still got to supplement because, you know, they're not, the ground doesn't give the same nutrition as it used to anymore because of all the chemicals we put on their stuff, and out of that, and all these other things that are going on, and all the modification to our fruits and vegetables, you know, so you can't buy a grape that's not so darn sweet, and other fruits that are the same way, and all this other stuff, the GMO and everything that's going on like that, then you have to wonder, you know, is there anything that is healthy for us anymore or that we can eat that will sustain us like we should be sustained? So, yeah, it's kind of hard to tell.
Then all the toxins in the environment that rob our body of nutrients just to deal with all the toxins, right? And then the stress that we're under these days makes us require a bigger demand on nutrients than what we did before because we're under stress. Yeah, it's like, holy crap.
Right. Right.
You really begin to wonder, what do we really need to do to make this work? Mm-hmm. Let's see. I don't want to do that one. Oh, here's one that's interesting. This one, I'm gonna discuss this one. It says, shocking scientific study concludes that violent video games may actually reduce real-world violence by providing a safe outlet for aggression.
There you go. Dang, now finally somebody is saying stuff that I've believed forever.
Exactly, right?
Yep. I mean, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. I have talked about that for years, even since I was like, you know, 10. I was always thought, you know, well, it's stupid to say that all these video games or whatever are making these people lash out this way. No, I didn't believe that because, you know, you look at third world countries or whatever, you know, like over the Middle East, right? They don't have access to video games. They don't watch a whole lot of TV because they don't have a whole lot of electricity, right?
Or Africa.
Or Africa. You look at these people are violent, and they are always at war, and they are always killing each other, and they are always doing horribly grotesque things to each other.
Yeah, I've always wondered that what in the hell happened in the Bible to make people so violent back then when there were no such thing as video games back then.
Right. Well, there you go. There's another good example.
There was no video games before World War I, was there, or World War II? And look how many millions of people were killed.
Exactly. Yeah, tell me. Oh, well, we're just desensitizing people to violence. What? I don't think so.
Well, that's a possibility, Dr. G, that it desensitizes them to violence. But it doesn't make them more violent. Maybe when they see violence, it doesn't affect them as much. They're not so devastated by seeing it, right? Because, you know, you watch movies on TV and they overly dramatize someone. Someone gets hurt or dies and people go off the deep end because they've never experienced anything like that before. There is a certain amount of callousness of when you see things over and over again. It doesn't affect you like it did before. But that doesn't make you violent yourself and make you want to be violent. It just means that you don't freak out when you see things happen, like a dog getting hit in the street, right?
Right, right. Exactly right.
So maybe you do get a little bit desensitized.
Unfortunate, but you don't have to have that emotional breakdown.
Yeah, I know. And exactly. And then, you know, it's like, how many people do you see on TV that are boxing or football or mixed martial arts? You usually see it with minorities, but you'll hear a couple of white people say it too periodically. It's like, those sports, those violent activities save their life.
Right. Right.
Mixed martial, yeah, martial arts too. They got them off the streets of where they were young, dumb, and wanting to just kick ass and take names. So they got them more organized. They got some mentors, and they were able to channel their aggression in ways. And yeah, look how aggressive they were by channeling it.
Right.
And then they can point to examples of how their friends from the streets are dead. They're still alive. And yet this violent person who beats the snot out of people for a living never gets in trouble for mass shootings.
Right. I mean, you get the rare instance of somebody that who's a professional fighter or whatever who winds up killing somebody with his, you know, with their ability. But that's so
rare. It's rare. When's the last time you heard about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's been, I think I heard about it once, and it was like years ago, and I think it was only one time that I've heard
about
it.
Yeah, and it might have been related to someone that had brain damage from their sport, too, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
So,
exactly right.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, isn't it about time we're seeing some studies out there going, they have some common sense, so we don't have to listen to this politically incorrect BS?
Oh, it's so nice. So nice.
Now that doesn't mean that sitting in front of a computer all day long is good for you now, right?
Right, exactly right.
We still have to limit our computer time and our video times and all that because of the fact that there are other effects that come from the cell phones, like radiation and all this other stuff, right? But we still...
Yep.
We could rest assured that while the violence isn't really going to make your kid go out and kill the neighborhood.
Yeah, right. We don't have to protect our child from violent video games. We just have to make sure that we get them a little bit of video games and then a lot more sun and other activities.
Mm-hmm.
So, yep.
So listen to this bad idea. This is a bad idea by a bunch of people that mean well, but they're dumb as rocks. California is to start recycling sewer water into tap water. And yes, it's full of insane chemicals.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's the problem with sewage-treated water, right? Is
right.
You get the bacteria out of there and maybe the viruses and whatever, the stuff that's going to make us sick like that, but we don't get rid of the chemicals. There's no way that we have any kind of filtration process or process that goes through that removes all the chemicals. So now you're going to have sewer-treated water, and it's going to be resting for a period of time. They probably won't even filter it through any kind of microfiltration device to remove metals or anything like that that's in it, and they're going to mix it with drinking water.
Yep.
Okay, so that's insane
that
to me.
That seems like a really smart thing to do, doesn't it? Boy, I tell you.
Yeah, I know.
Where was that done? Where was that supposed to be done at?
California, of course.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what I thought you said. I thought L.A. was already doing that.
Well, L.A. might be, but now the whole state's going through.
Yeah, that's just terrible. Because I tell you what, I've gone to L.A. a few times, the L.A. area. Boy, you just can't drink the tap water there. It's just yuck. It's nasty.
Oh, it always has been. Ever since I was a little kid, I could not stand to go to California and drink their water. It's like, this is the most disgusting water on the planet. Right?
Yeah.
It's like, huh. Yeah. Oh, here you go. This was in early March. It says, a good man with an AR-15 rifle saves the life of a stabbing victim, but you won't hear about it in the American media.
Boy, you won't either.
That nope, and yet here it is. It did happen.
Nice.
Okay, here we go. This is another thing that chiropractors need to be aware of that I use the treatment of inflammation all the time. It says Kukurum, which comes from turmeric, right? Helps reduce muscle soreness and injury pain after physical activity, according to a study. Yeah, and it's, yeah, I know. Anyway, there's a whole lot to this. This is a pretty good study. They measured things on a visual analog scale, and they compared it to analgesics or inflammatories. I'm not sure which one. Found out that the curcumin, which is in turmeric, had a huge benefit. Okay, so here we go. Sunlight is healthy for the eyes, right? The millions of children have compromised eyesight from not getting enough natural light. And I'll say not only not enough natural light to their eyes, but too much artificial light from cell phones.
Yep. I was thinking that very same thing.
Yep. Oh, here we go. Niacin, which is vitamin B3, may improve cognitive and physical function by preventing neurological damage. Mm-hmm. It says, in conducting a study, researchers at the National Institute of Aging at the U.S. National Institute of Health added a vitamin B3 derivative into the diet of mice with Alzheimer's disease for 3 months. The findings of the study revealed that supplementation resulted in a decrease in tangles in the brain of mice, higher neuroplasticity, fewer DNA impairment, increased production of new nerve cells from neuronal stem cells, and lower levels of neuronal damage and death in comparison to those mice who were not supplemented with vitamin B3.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay, so that niacin is one of those vitamins that they added to grains, right?
Right.
So now here's the deal. Here's the deal. We had a deficiency of vitamin niacin for a long time. That's why they recognized it was such a huge problem that they added it back to grains. I'm not sure of this. But if more and more people are going grain-free, are we getting enough niacin?
That could be it, too. But I thought part of the reason that they were having to add that back to the grains was because when they did all their processing of the grains, it stripped all that out of there.
Well, that is true. They did do that. But again, we had a big deficiency. So so my question is, is that if we go off of grains, do we still need B3, or are we getting enough of it from our regular diet if we go away from grains?
That's a good question. Stands to reason we might need to have that supplement, huh?
It's possible, right? Because maybe our other foods are deficient enough in them now, like processing of our grains was that required us to supplement them, right? It's possible. And again, that's one of the reasons why getting a multiple vitamin is probably a good thing, right?
Right.
Just to make up for these little possibilities here.
That makes good sense to me.
So, do you take too much ibuprofen? It says it could cause bleeding stomach ulcers and even a heart attack, according to a new study. Okay, Dr. Goforth, I thought this was safe. We should add ibuprofen to the drinking water because inflammation is such a bad problem in the United States that we all need to take ibuprofen.
Don't we, though?
Mm-hmm. says a lot of people are overdosing on ibuprofen, according to a new study published in the Journal of Pharmacoepidemiology and Drug Safety. However, this could take a toll on our health, as it could lead to bleeding, stomach ulcers, and even a heart attack. The study was, anyway, I'm not going to go into all the details. There's a lot of interesting stuff in there. But isn't that amazing that this, this drug that we were told for the longest time is safe?
Safe.
Can cause heart attacks.
Yep. Uh-oh. Maybe it's not as safe as we thought it was.
You know? Yeah, I know. I know. Well, we kind of known about the bleeding ulcers for a long time. I remember the statistics, and I don't know if these are true statistics or not, so don't quote me, but it's something like 33,000 people that die a year from bleeding ulcers that are caused by non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, which is a lot of people, but when you tell people that, patients, it kind of, their eyes gloss over. I think if we say it increases your risk of a heart attack, maybe their eyes won't gloss over so much anymore, right?
Well, I've taken ibuprofen, and it has never done anything to me except for help me.
That's what they say.
I know.
Well, you know, that's the other thing is, you know, they come into you, and they got a really bad back, right? And they go, man, I've never had this problem before. I don't know why this is so bad.
Yeah.
You know, it's like because you didn't take care of yourself properly for years, right? It's slowly you've had a problem. You've just been supplementing your diet with ibuprofen and Tylenol for a long time, and now they don't work anymore, and you're wondering why you have the problem, because you've been degenerating and not taking care of the underlying causes, just covering up some of the painful symptoms.
Right. Exactly right.
Yeah. Okay, so here we go, new study. No sweets or juice on an empty stomach. Sugars, including fructose, harm the good bacteria in your gut in the absence of food.
Okay. That makes sense.
It makes sense, but I never heard of that one before. But that's quite interesting. The sugar just, well, you know what? Sugar can be antibacterial, right? That's why a lot of sugar-sweetened stuff seems to last a long time, right? Because they, the bacteria can't grow in them in a high concentration as easily as they can in lower concentrations. So it makes sense that if they put in your gut without any food to buffer it, that it would do it. So it does make sense. Anyway, where are we going with the next one? Low-calorie diets enhances intestinal regeneration after injury.
Okay,
so
we had something about that last time, didn't we?
Yeah, I think we did, because this one looks very similar to what I talked about before.
Yeah.
It is. So I'm going to put that one aside and go on to the next one. Let's see. Anyway, motion deficiency causes significant sensory and motor dysfunction, a restoration of motor restores function.
Cool.
Yeah. So this one I got this one from Dr. Yeah, this one let's see if I can I'm looking at this one. Okay, here's another one that he wrote here. It says lack of motion associated with disuse impairs perception and shrinks somatosensory cortical maps and restoration of movement restores. So, yeah, anyway, lack of movement causes problems. Movement restores the body.
Right. That's kind of awesome.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Did you say that was from Dr. Chestnut?
Yeah, that's Dr. Chestnut, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so here we go. This one's from Dr. Chestnut as well, because he has a newsletter I subscribe to now, and I print his stuff out. I just don't talk about them on the radio because a lot of them seem to be geared more towards the chiropractor. The wording is it, and I'm not comfortable sharing them as easily with other people. But anyway, here's another one. He says, a landmark research shows chiropractic is 2,700% more effective than medical or physical therapy.
Nice. Where did chiropractors go?
Yeah, this was, it says, the chiropractic hospital-based interventions research outcome study, a randomized controlled trial on the effectiveness of clinical practice guidelines in the medical and chiropractic management of patients with acute mechanical low back pain, published in the journal Spine. So here's what he says. Key concepts. This is his opinion based on the study. There is just no more debating the fact that chiropractic care is the best available spinal health care option.
Right.
The problem is that medical doctors, physiotherapists, insurance companies, and health agencies either don't know or won't admit this fact. As the authors of the study point out, multiple studies have demonstrated a poor correlation between what primary healthcare providers think is an effective treatment and what has actually been shown to be an effective treatment.
Yep, I can believe that.
So I might stop the show a minute or two early, because this is a mic drop moment for chiropractors that might be listening to our show. I'm going to tell you what he says and quote him, or how I could say it's a mic drop. It says, key take-home point, this is what he says. Chiropractic represents the most evidence-based, most effective, and most cost-effective spinal health care intervention, period. No debate. Anybody who says otherwise has simply not read the literature or is deliberately misleading you.
Wow. Yep. Drop the mic.
Yeah. You know what I mean, right? What else could top that with what we've been talking about?
Right, exactly.
So, amazing. Yeah. Yeah, and that was a study published actually in 2010. So that's 8 years old now. And so it's 8 years old. How come we aren't part of the new healthcare system?
Yeah, it's because the new healthcare system is just the old sick care, just a different way.
Yeah, I know. That irked us both when Obamacare was being developed, is the thought that what they wanted to do was just give more people the same failing system rather than improving the system.
Yep. Exactly right.
And if you just read what Dr. Chestnut wrote there about that study and other studies, that isn't the only one. There are others out there. That's why I said the debate is over. We've got overwhelming evidence that we're more effective and less more cost effective than everything else. I remember reading people talking about every single workers' comp study done in every single state and every single incidence, and all the time, always shown we were more cost-effective and more effective, period. They all showed it. I remember a huge study of millions of people in California who, when they used chiropractors as the primary healthcare practitioners in their HMO plan, and they had doctors on there, they found that chiropractic management of no matter what was wrong with people was more effective and less costly by a lot. The chiropractors have the ability to refer people where appropriate, and we're not stupid. This was done in California.
Right.
And we're not stupid.
Right.
We don't go, "Duh, you don't need that because we don't believe in medicine. We don't believe in surgery." You know, we go, "Okay, so this is what's wrong with you. We need to send you out for study." So what happened is we were less likely to overutilize imaging studies, MRIs, CT scans, less likely to use them. And when we did use them, they were certainly much, much more appropriate, and they definitely showed stuff going on.
Right.
And the outcomes from that were far better. So, yeah, so... Yeah, Mike, like I said, mic drop moment. This is We need to get people coming to the chiropractor's office for anything related to musculoskeletal problems. Period.
Yep.
We need to be in charge.
Yep.
Anyway.
Period.
So, period. Yep. So, anyway, again, that's really good stuff. So, let's call it quits today, okay? So, that
all
concludes
right.
Today's show. So, until next time, here's to your health.
Here's to your health.
Sandra?